The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I feel like we have this fantastic life. We have so much to be grateful for, and maybe a lot of it goes unexamined. And do we need to explore some of that? Absolutely. But that is why we're here, right? So let's do it. Let's focus, roll up our sleeves, and get to it.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 418 for the week of August 1st, 2022. I am emotionally aloof 50-year-old David T. Cole, and I'm here with real estate agent metaphor Sarah D. Bunting.
Love me or list me.
Annoying divorcee Tara Ariano.
I'm sad, but I'm so rich.
And uncoupled almost 45er Malcolm Venable.
Swipe right on me, please. Please.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the second time, although it's been a while, he's a writer and critic, Malcolm Venable. Welcome, Malcolm!
Welcome back, Malcolm!
So happy to have you back for this discussion of Uncoupled, a new sitcom on Netflix, in which Michael, Neil Patrick Harris, is a 40-something realtor in Manhattan who, as the premiere begins, is excited about a surprise 50th birthday party he is throwing for Colin, Tuck Watkins, his boyfriend of 17 years. A slight pall is cast on the day when Michael's housekeeper calls him to say they've been robbed, but when Michael mentions it on the way into what he's told Colin is just a quiet dinner, Colin explains there wasn't a robbery. Colin took his stuff and moved out. Will Michael ever figure out why Colin did it, and will he accept the breakup or embrace singlehood? The show is co-created by Darren Star of Sex and the City fame and Jeffrey Richman, a writer on a bunch of sitcoms, most recently Modern Family. And Netflix dropped the entire first season Friday. We may spoil plot points from any episode. Let's do the Chen check-in. Malcolm, should our listeners watch Uncoupled?
Yes.
Okay. Sarah?
Nope.
Dave?
I'm going to go no on this one.
I did not care for it either, but I'm really excited because when I first emailed Malcolm about this, he said he had thoughts with a capital T, and I want to hear them. Give us those thoughts. Please start us off.
Well, when I say yes, I should add the sort of disclaimer that you like to hate watch it.
Okay, great. Yes. Different.
In the same way that I say you must watch and just like that, but like you have something to like, you know, hate in life. Mm-hmm. I was talking to one of my friends about it who he said, are you watching Uncoupled? I love it. It's so amazing. And I was like, what? Like, why? I was like, all these queens sound exactly the fucking same. They're privileged and entitled and like, I hate them. And they all talk like the same way. And he was like, honey, we all sound like that. And I was like, you're right. So, I mean, there's that. So it's like, I can't really be mad. And somebody else said it was like Sex and the City. It's like, no, because of Sex and the City, the archetypes were all clearly defined, right? Like, yes. You had your Samantha, you had your Carrie, you had, you know, the rest of the cast. Mm-hmm. And like, they were each in their own bucket and there was some overlap, but all these guys sound exactly the same. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, at the top of it, it's just like all the gay cliche jokes you could possibly make. It's like poppers, grinders, butt sex. It's like, yeah, we got it. You're gay. You know what I mean? So it was like, that was really fucking annoying. And it was like, they're all just like entitled, wealthy, bitchy queens that all operate in the same circle, which is fine. And that's somebody's life, but it's not mine. And I mm-hmm. also happen to find that life quite grating. So, And then, I mean, I just tweeted this morning. I just realized, too, the premise is really hard to wrap your head around because I've forgotten this as the episodes go on. But in the premise, you know, this guy leaves them, and then Neil Patrick Harris's character is like, oh, he left me, and trying to get him back. No, I would kill him. I would destroy his whole life. Like, there's no universe in which somebody would pack up all their shit, get out of my apartment, and then, like, I'm trying to, like, figure out what happened. No. Mm-hmm. It would be called I May Destroy You Part 2 because I would murder him.
That sounds way more entertaining than the show I watched, so please make that happen for me, universe, hear our cry.
I would leak his nudes. I would find his pets. I would murder his pets. I would find his nieces and nephews and get them kicked out of school. Like, I would not stop until he left Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I will say two things that did make it enjoyable for me is Tisha Campbell. Tisha Campbell's great, and she adds quite a bit of, I would say, like, something other than, like, you know, like, white gay tired shit in it. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, Andre DeShields is great to see too, just to see him like alive and like breathing and like doing things.
Yeah.
This show accidentally does what Succession does, which is it only cares about rich people.
Yeah.
And where Succession makes a point of not showing the little people, the poor people, the people that are not super, super wealthy. Mm-hmm. That character is the closest that the show comes to not being super rich people only.
I mean, we see her kitchen later in the season. She's also not rich.
Yeah. She's not, but I mean, that's the, but whereas Succession is making a statement about it.
Yes.
This show is just like, it's got blinders on. Like every, like it doesn't know what it's doing, I feel.
Yes.
So yeah, why didn't you guys like, why do you say no? I'm curious to hear.
Sarah, why don't you go first?
Okay. all right. I will say, like, it's not like thoroughgoingly hateful. It is like Sex in the City that it's like there are things about it that occasionally you're like, oh, I recognize that. Mm-hmm. I am married to a realtor and I kind of wanted the series to be these just assholic super rich people that he has to deal with as clients. Because I hear stories about these people, the Brooklyn Verge, every day, and I hate them. And what Malcolm is talking about doing with an ex who moved out is what I feel like doing to my husband's clients a lot of the time. and Neil Patrick Harris is good. Like, there are good performances in here, but, like, at least on Sex in the City, like sometimes there was something that I recognized. And in this, I just am like, I don't know these people. And this was a problem that I had with Sex in the City. Like, I'm not trying to tell queer creators how to make queer characters, but Stanford and Mario Cantone and their whole conception of the girls' gaze. Mm-hmm. Possessive implied, giant air quotes, always just made me feel really nauseated. And this is like a only slightly evolved version of that, in my opinion, that this is like a show that is not taking its own characters seriously and letting them be anything except these surfacey, jokey, how long till the Marie's crisis joke thing that's like, I don't feel like anyone has time for that. Like, what, it's just not saying anything. I don't feel like it is pretty to look at. Occasionally there's a good line. Neil Patrick Harris is like feasting on this role and good for him. There's a lot of like, you know, Colin himself, I was like, Hermes towels that you're not allowed to use. Like, let him go. Like, have him clean out some other shit. Have him come to my house and take some shit out of here. Like, I don't know. I just really struggled to relate to it like an order beyond the problem I had with Sex in the City, which, again, satisfying hate watch and kind of like rotten candy to look at, but this just felt really frustrating because I felt like maybe there was a good show and an interesting set of characters in here that we weren't getting to because these creators aren't quite good enough at writing. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, when I interviewed Darren Star, and we'll link it in the show notes, but one of the questions I asked him was like, you know, he tends to write shows about, you know, the big scare quotes, aspirational, meaning rich characters. And that's, he hasn't really tried to write someone who's struggling since Carrie. And that was like borderline with her $3 a word struggling. From Vogue or whatever the fuck. but I asked him, like, you know, if you're a person like Michael is later in the season who gets on dating apps, like, that's a leveler. You could meet anyone on a dating app. You don't know what their circumstances are. And did you ever think about having him meet someone who was less well off? Because later in the season, he meets a teacher and they get really close and go on a bunch of dates. And I thought, because the guy seems to, he's also just recently out of a long-term relationship and they get really close really fast. And I was like, it's going to turn out this guy's homeless or something. Or like Michael's like, why don't we go to your place once? And he has like 8 roommates or something. And that doesn't happen. Like, it just feels like there were missed opportunities here to like show a fuller world. And maybe that's not what they were interested in. And if you just want to write a show about rich people, there's people that will watch that. That's what, you know, most of his stuff
but is. It's not exactly like, it is a show that has rich people, but it's not a show about rich people. That's the problem. It's like,
right,
it was just written, they were writing what they knew, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they weren't writing it as, okay, what do we have to say about, you know, rich gay culture in New York versus not rich gay cult. That's not the show.
Yeah.
It's not even what are the rich people up to. It's just a show that is very oatmeal in its plotting and what it wants to do, which is not much, that happens to have a lot of rich characters in it. I would be more satisfied with the show if it leaned into the fact that everybody here is making a lot of money and they leaned into the real estate porn and stuff like that, at least as something that you could hook into.
Yeah.
But it's not really doing that. Somehow it is very opulent and boring at the same time.
Right. And the other thing is, like, when I did interview, you know, Darren Star, I asked him, like, this is the first, you're a gay TV creator. This is the first time you've centered a gay character. Like, how does that feel when you haven't probably had this opportunity before? Like, Matt Fielding was one of
After
one
all the
gay
hugs,
character
I was just gonna
in
say.
1992.
Yeah.
Times have changed. And he was very defensive. Like, I shouldn't say defensive, but he was very much like, this is a show for everyone. And like, totally, there's stuff here potentially for everyone to enjoy. Some things about relationships are for sure universal. But it also just felt like he tiptoes to the line of like showing what queer life really is like in 2022, and then he backs off. It seemed to me, Malcolm, I don't know, maybe you disagree. You would know better than me.
Well, it was the paradox for me too, right? So if there was any sort of like meat to it, it was this notion of like gay dating in 2020, and then to put a finer point on it, you know, somebody who has to navigate that world in a fresh way, you know, that hasn't in a long time. And then obviously, lastly, as somebody who's like past the age of, 45 or whatever. So there's something to latch on to. And I do think as a 40 something man who knows his way around those apps too, like some of it is like, of it's like, it's not true to life. It's true to life, but it's presented in a way that is, just quite surface and not really like, I can't remember how many times I laughed. Like, it was just like, okay. I mean, I smirked, but I didn't laugh.
Yeah.
And I will say, that, to be fair, it's challenging, right? Because, you know, if you're going to write a comedy about gay life and gay dating, some of the stuff is just going to be obvious poppers, grinders, you know, tops, bottoms. It's just like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But you would expect a little bit more like savvy and a little bit more sort of elevated, like intentional thinking and a way to kind of dodge those tropes for somebody who's been doing this for as long as they've been doing it.
Yeah.
Then additionally too, I think, you know, not only is it the issues of, the sort of classy elitist piece of it coming through in a way that's not really enjoyable. Like, there's a way to show, like, Marsha Gay Harden's character is, like, elitist and rich in a fun way. Like, she's bitchy and it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of them, it's just like, oh, my Hermes towels, girl, no one cares. And it's not funny. It's not cute. You know what I mean? It's not. It's just fucking not. And then, like, but it's also, too, the issue of race, too, I think is, like, hard to ignore. Like, yes, there is diversity within the characters. One of them is Black, but they all operate on that same sort of like level. The voice is a very like very specific white gay man. It's like all of them have that same voice and they don't deviate from it. A couple other things I think is important to say. I think so the one Black character is basically positioned as a bit of a sexaholic,
right,
whatever that is. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it is weird to sort of marginalize gay men or pathologicalize, you know what I'm trying to say. I think it's weird to turn enjoying sex into pathology, because that's the one great thing we get about being gay. We fuck whoever we want. Like, we don't have to abide by those dumbass straight rules. Like, I'm all for it. But it was just kind of weird. It was just kind of tired. Like, oh, yeah, like another gay man on the apps, whatever. But another thing I think is important to remember about this show. Remember, there was a Latina maid that they cut out of this series. You remember that? Like, there was a controversy.
Oh, my God. I forgot.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It was a controversy before this shit even aired. So there was a, evidently in the beginning where Neil Patrick Harris's character discovers or believes that he's been robbed. Apparently there was, they had a Latinx woman playing the maid, and he was supposed to come in and she was supposed to say something along to him, like, oh my God, we've been robbed or something like that. And it's like, girl, no, you did not write that shit in there in the year 2022.
Yeah.
And that just illustrates the point of, like, this voice is so specific. And it's a voice that kind of has his head up his own ass and it doesn't realize how grating and superficial it sounds. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't realize how unrelatable the lead character is in certain ways. Like Dave was saying, like, just lean into the, like, rich, like, 0.5% rarefied air part of it. But the same with Carrie. Like, I think Carrie was supposed to be every woman, and like all of the fucking TV critics watching it were like,
nope.
so much nope. All the nope. And like there's also a problem with, I think, maybe Darren Star just like still existing in the 90s and in this world where, especially if straight characters are centered, then the gay characters have to have their sort of like real, genuine sexual depth subtracted and just be in a certain number of dimensions, because that's how he was used to, that's where he was stuck as a writer and creator for TV in the late 90s and early millennium. I don't want to speak for him, but this is just like frustrating to watch, because there are better shows about New York. There are better shows about queer life in New York. There are better shows about bitchy real estate agents. Like, it's just not.
Well, to your point, I feel like it exists on the same frustrations I had with this were the same ones that I had with And Just Like That. It's like, oh, we're old, we're dating, and like, we're living in New York. It's like, oh, okay.
Right.
On this cloud, like above 75th Street, where I'm not allowed to go because my bank statement will not let me pass. Okay.
I was just surprised, given the subject matter and the creators, just how sleepy the whole thing felt.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt kind of low energy, kind of tired.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting that out of it.
Yeah. Dave knew I watched the whole season, so he asked me, like, does this happen? And it was such a good idea. I was mad that they didn't do it. So you have to say it now. And this is this big spoiler for later in the season, but go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Well, in the first episode, Colin, who is the boyfriend who leaves Michael, who's Neil Patrick Harris's character, he moves out in the first episode. And the first episode is also where we find out that the Marsha Gay Harden's character husband left her suddenly. And blah. And I thought, oh, okay, the husband came out of the closet and is now hooked up with Colin in a Darren Star small universe situation. But apparently that's not the case.
No.
And somehow I'm not a TV writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that to that point, this is kind of like, I won't call it lazy writing. That's not very kind, and it's a bit unfair. But it was sort of like, what? Where are you guys going with this? Yeah. I will say, so I definitely always try to find, you know, some redeeming things about it. Like I said, Tisha was great, and I also think Michael Patrick Harris is really great in it, and like he does really well with what he's been given. He's enjoyable. Yeah. He's believable. There are moments of depth that he has where he feels sad. I think he is very tone deaf to his own like inability to connect with his own partner. Like, there's a scene in the therapist's office where he just talks the entire time and doesn't let his partner speak, which illustrates perhaps why this guy left him.
Right.
But even that is just like hard to believe. Like, okay, so you only go to therapy after 17 years when he leaves you? Like, like this issue, these issues only surface now that he's left. It just doesn't make any sense. And by the time you get to the end, there's no real explanation. Like, you don't really investigate why he's done this.
Yeah.
And it leaves you a little bit limp, you know?
Yeah.
And then I can't imagine anybody having that done to them with, like I said, I'd be homicidal. Y'all would never, I would be in prison. But I think like he just seems so desperate, and he just seems so sort of, I think any reasonable person would at least cut off contacts, or at least, you know, try to start fresh. But he's just so desperate, and he's like cloying, trying to get this man back who's left him. It kind of is quite confusing.
Yeah. I mean, when he's in the interview, he's talked about how that, like, Colin's leaving is sort of the mystery at the center of the show. But then there's no answer. Like, there's no, limp is the perfect way to say it. Like, it's just, it doesn't go anywhere. The answer is just what you think. It's the same at the end as it is at the beginning, which is, I'm just sick of your shit. Like, and I never said anything about it in 17 years for reasons, because I'm in finance and I can't talk about my feelings.
Whose side is the show on is what it comes down to for me, because it's possible to have like a dickhead central character and still you understand that the show is on their side and rooting for them, even if they're douchebags sometimes.
Yes.
But Carrie, that was a problem that the show did not seem to realize, that like, this isn't cute.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael, same issue sometimes, not to that degree, but during that scene I wrote in my notes like, does the show like this dude?
Right.
What is wanted from us?
Yeah, well, that's the end of the line for some of us, so
yeah,
we can wrap
not
it up
for
there.
Me to watch it, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, Uncoupled from Uncoupled.
It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
So I watched Surface because I interviewed one of its stars, Oliver Jackson Cohen, for GQ, which we'll link in the show notes. He was the Invisible Man in The Invisible Man. Take my word for it. Ha ha. That's an Invisible Man joke. Surface is a new drama on Apple TV+. Gugu Mbatha-Raw plays Sophie, who at the start of the series is putting her life back together after coming out of a coma that left her with amnesia. She's been told she attempted suicide by jumping off a ferry, but is that what happened? Is it perhaps possible that she hasn't heard the whole truth from her finance bro husband? Spoiler, yes, there is more to it. And this is a fine premise for a story. I will admit that it went places that I didn't expect, and a lot of plot developments that I was expecting did not happen. But the problem with Surface is that fundamentally, this premise is not a TV series. It is a movie. And you might remember this complaint from earlier this year when I said the same thing about Severance, also on Apple TV+. There's a certain kind of show now where while you're watching it, you can tell what could have been a tight 90 minutes to 2 hours is now just getting bloated out by its creator because there's so many more places to sell a series project now. And paradoxically, it feels like a lighter lift to get something made by making it bigger. And Vulture is recapping Surface, and the beginning of the second episode recap is like, nothing happened. Because it's true. Like, the plot does not progress. But later in the season, it's like, wait, why is this plot offshoot happening? And the reason is to justify an 8-part season order and, like, keep it going. And when I got to the end and it set up another season, I'm obviously not going to watch it, but I was still mad on principle. And I know movies seem like old hat. TV's the new hotness. If you wrote something, you eventually want people to see it. I get all that. But when you're doing shenanigans with your script, it's very obvious. Like, you can tell.
I feel like this is a not constant, but a frequent note of mine. If it doesn't like sink to the level of complaint about true crime docuseries,
that
it's like this was 101 minutes.
Yeah.
Except now it's 170 minutes. Why?
Right.
There's not that much. Like, how many more reenactments do we need in soft focus?
Not totally.
Two, Dave says.
This also goes the other way, and I apologize if I also said this with regard to Severance, but The Irishman and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood were both spiritually TV shows to me. That's a whole other conversation, but
yep.
The bottom line is don't watch Surface. It is boring. You can read that review with Oliver Jackson Cohen, who, as much as I just shit on his show, was really, really charming. He's also in a movie right now called Mr. Malcolm's List that is on VOD that is very cute and has an amazing cast. Zoe Ashton and Freda Pinto, among others. And I'm also going to replug the abortion fund funding movie trivia raffle. You can still enter movie trivia sometimes always at gmail.com. All you need to do to enter that is send proof that you donated to an abortion fund in the recent past, and you may be entered to be on a trivia team that may be headed by me, maybe headed by Sarah or Joe or many other people that you've heard on this podcast before. So do that. It's for a wonderful cause.
All right, Malcolm, what do you have for us today?
Oh, so I started This Fool on Hulu. And disclaimer, I'm very goofy and silly. And I found this to be very enjoyably goofy and silly, at least the pilot. But the first two are very, very funny. It's from this comedian, Chris Estrada. And the premise is that he's just like some sad sack loser. It's set in LA and it's from the point of view from Mexican-American young folks in LA, which is a perspective and point of view like we don't hear enough of. Like the sadly departed Vita on Stars was sort of a reflection of this world, but this is way more comedic. This is a lot like Southside on Comedy Central now on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. And this is really silly and goofy. So Chris Estrada, a stand-up comedian in real life, is a sort of like sad sack loser, Julius. He lives at home, and his cousin, Luis, played by Frankie Quinones, I think it's pronounced his name. I hope I'm not butchering it. Frankie is also a comedian. So Luis comes home from prison, and the two of them are worlds apart. Julius is like a kind of a nerd, kind of a loser, unambitious, afraid to do anything in life. And Luis is like basically like a reformed gangbanger. Julius works at this ridiculously named nonprofit that's called like a Hugs Not Thugs, and it helps like reform helps like gangbangers like acclimate their way back in society by like making cupcakes and shit. It's like so ridiculous, but it's very funny and it's very cute, so I really enjoyed it. And again, I think it's great to see this point of view represented, and in a comedic way too. It's not trying to take itself too seriously. And you know, if you know anything about this sort of like specifically the LA Mexican American dialect and stuff, it's like This Fool is, you know, hey, look at this fool. So it's like you hear that over and over again. That's the through line through. And it's nice to hear that voice on TV. I enjoyed it. It's really fun.
Oh, that sounds great. I loved, we love Southside. So hearing that comparison is a huge endorsement.
Also, speaking of, it doesn't take place in LA, but whatever happened to Los Espookies? Is that ever
coming? It's coming back. It's coming back next month.
Fuck me, that was a good show.
Well, glad you mentioned that because Fred Armisen is one of the producers on This Fool.
And he
was
one of the producers on
Sarah DiBonte.
Yes, donate to abortion funds, but I'm still here to talk about Young and Pregnant on MTV. It is back on. It sort of snuck back in, and I didn't realize it until I looked at my DVR and was like, oh, shit. The show is, at least for this old broad, an even more intense experience post-Roe, because now it is even harder for these young women to make different choices from the ones that they seem to tend towards, viz. Their being on the show. And even more glaringly apparent how little anti-abortion activists and legislators care about the children whose lives they're claiming to defend, because obviously it's about maintaining and controlling the potentially pregnant as a vast underclass. But anyway, I had a whole like list here of the current subjects in order of most to least compelling, but it's actually kind of almost too depressing to get into. I will just say a couple of things. First of all, my whole thing with this show for like a couple seasons now has been hashtag free Tiaja, but I think maybe she has freed herself. she is co-parenting Amor with Kaya, and the father of Kaya's son is about to come out of prison. And Tiaja seems to be the only one who's like, it's fine. I got this. So I'm watching that with interest. Kaya does seem to have learned to keep it a little frostier, low bar, but she's hanging in there. The whole Kayla Luke situation, I can't. I think, Tara, you have a couple of comments.
No,
about...
I can't is a fine way to put it. Like, it just keeps getting uglier. She just has no respect for this guy's family. And it goes both ways, but I feel like she started it. And it doesn't help that part of the reason that Luke's family hates her is that she cheated on him, but he also cheated on her. So it's like everyone is having problems here. This is just an ugly situation. And Kayla and Luke should not stay together out of spite, which seems to be what is maybe happening.
Well, it's starting to feel to me, and maybe I'm wrong, like she and Luke are basically fine, or at least fine enough to have a capital A agreement to just cash the checks. Because even that big flap a few episodes ago with the second sit down with Luke's family felt this, there was this like Real Housewives feel to it. Mm-hmm. And like if everyone isn't screaming at each other and security isn't rushing into frame to separate them, then they don't have a storyline. And it just feels like everyone's hitting their marks, Melissa Gorga style, and it's not that interesting. Mm-hmm. I do have a note for Kayla about the super dark hair dye. It's not her look.
No.
It's not great. Brianna continues to be a brat who is like only expressing gratitude for anything that anyone in her family does in voiceover. And I'm almost sure that the producers are like, so do you want to sound like less of a bee?
Yeah.
And she's like, it's just a total flat line. And then finally, the sad sack.
Speaking of sad sacks.
boy. There was a moment in, I guess it was as we're recording this 2 episodes ago now, where like she, spoiler, finds out she's pregnant again. She's like, so I'm pregnant. Have a good day at work to her. Oh, my God. And then her mom, her dad and her like stepmom, I'm not sure if they're married, but her stepmom is just like so eager to get her out of their house and moved out that she's like, take a bunch of cans of soup and this thing of milk and like go somewhere else. Figure it out. Oh, God, she's so frustrating. But at the same time, the show still has value, albeit depressing value. And sort of like this is not aspirational TV, but at least it is reflecting a reality for many, many, many people in this country. And I think it is worthwhile. That said, I would rather see a spinoff about all the parental figures because Rachel's mom and Kaya's mom in particular just need to like drive around talking shit, starting about their daughters and then moving on to everyone else on the show. I would watch the hell out of that. Speaking of aspects of the Mammarian American experience that we might want to better understand, Lilith Fair. Yeah. Mark Blankenship and I are trying to determine which of the top 40 Lilith Fair tracks that we have selected is the Lilith Fairest of them all. We are 2 episodes in currently. It is torture trying to rank these things. Please come along, not for the torture part. That's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. That's wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want in on the voting, patreon.com/mastass. You don't have to be a paid supporter of ours. You just need a Patreon account. That's it.
I will try to make this quick because we are a little short on time. Let's talk about the Ipcris file on AMC Plus. This is a perfectly cromulent Cold War conspiracy spy thriller from the UK.
Yep.
If I ended it there and you sort of imagine what this show is, you're probably 99% the way there. It absolutely fuels Tara's assertion that every British person is in fact a spy.
Yes.
There's like one British person on the show that has not yet come out as a spy on this show.
There's moments where like you cut to a conversation's happening and then you cut outside the door and someone else that you've never seen before is like listening with their ear pressed towards it. Like literally everyone is a spy. And by the end, it's truly zero people in it are not.
And if not by profession, by deed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
It stars Joe Cole. This is a guy that we first saw in Gangs of London, and he is once again the worst part of an otherwise compelling TV show.
Yeah.
He's got all the charisma of a wet paper bag, this guy. I don't know how he's getting work on leads of these shows.
He's not even cute. No offense.
Well, they gave him these period glasses, like these big, thick, chunky glasses that gives him this sort of put together Stephen Merchant vibe. Yes. So I kind of enjoyed the performance on that, that I imagined it was Stephen Merchant from the UK office as this sort of like violent Cold War spy kind of guy.
Yeah.
But the real reason I'm bringing the show up is because of the credits. And they've done something very smart with this show, which is every credit sequence after the premiere is both the credits and the previouslys. So they dress up certain scenes of what you need to know in sort of a primary color treatment on little pieces of videos and photos, very period appropriate. Feels like something you would see on like a novel cover or something like that in the 60s. No muss, no fuss. Don't need to skip intro if you want to watch the previouslys. If you do, bam, you've only skipped one thing. You've skipped both the intro and the previouslys at the same time.
Yep.
Innovation in television happening over on AMC+. Good job, guys.
Yeah.
All right. On the next Extra Extra Hot Great dropping this Friday, we are talking about important TV eyebrows.
Yes, we are.
And then right here on EHG Prime next week, we welcome new guest Elon Muscat to talk about The Sandman. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canning. Presenting this week, it is Sean Pfluger. Take it away, Sean.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. This is Sean, and I'm pitching a show for the canon from the critically acclaimed and short-lived show Underground. Running from 2016 to 2017, Underground was a bold American drama with Black creators and majority Black-centered cast. Ultimately, it was canceled because the network, WGN, was sold and abandoned original programming. There is one episode that caused a stir with many articles written about it. It is episode 2.6, Minty. Although its message is emblematic of the show, its creative direction and storytelling are in sharp contrast to the typical episode. It is a bottle episode containing two locations, and the vast majority of the script is given to the storytelling of one actor, a recurring guest star, Aisha Hines, as Harriet Tubman.
I imagine a lot of y'all done come across Uncle Tom's Cabin. I've heard it read, and I tell you, Miss Stowe's pen hadn't begun to paint what slavery is as I've seen it in the far South. It's the next thing to hell.
The episode has the feel of a play and is rooted in historical truth. Harriet Tubman did give talks all over the country about slavery and abolition. There's a build to this episode that starts only with visuals and a song. This song is the only non-diegetic music in the whole episode. We see her scars as she prepares for her speech. Harriet is speaking on an auction block with various pieces of property labeled by lots. There are signs behind her that say, valuable freehold property for sale. There are a few reactions from the mixed crowd of white and Black people, but there are actually only two other named characters in the crowd. The rest of the usual cast is given the week off. Harriet outlines what bondage is and how a Black life is subject to the whims of their master.
I got more scars on my body than I can count. Miss Susan, the next woman I was hired out to, she gave me a lot of them. The first day, she told me to dust and sweep the great room. No instructions. She just pushed the broom in my hand and left me to work. And when she returned, she wasn't happy with what she saw, so she took a rawhide and... She had me come at it again. No word about what I done wrong. I tried my best to collect every piece of dust. I even had that thing in my hand, dusting my own blood. But when she returned, I took up that broom once more. And then again. I never cried out once.
Ultimately, it's her fear of being sold that gives her the impetus to escape to freedom on her own.
I seen a wildfire once. When I was younger, I stood right at the edge of it with my daddy. I stared at it for a long time, and still I barely got the words to describe it. The heat, the hum of activity, the relentless power of them flames consuming everything in its path. That's how you gotta burn for freedom. Wild-like, ready to scorch any doubt in your path. Because that's what it's gonna take.
And I really, really love this moment when Harry breaks down after her first moment of freedom.
I crossed the line. I was in Pennsylvania. I looked at my hands. See if I was the same person. There was such a glory over everything. The sun come like gold through the trees. And over the fields, I felt like I was in heaven. I had crossed the line. I was free.
When she finds out her husband has moved on to another woman, she starts to free other slaves. She widens her ambition and saves more than just her own family.
There ain't much that surprises me these days. But finding out John had taken up with another woman in my absence, that was hard. Hearing that they was living as man and wife in the same home we had. Knowing I'd come all that way for him and he refused to come back with me. I was hurt. I was angry and jealous. I wanted to run to his house, my house, and make all the trouble I could. But how foolish it was, just for temper to make mischief. If he could do without me, I could do without him.
Then we come to the part that we probably all know from grade school, the part where Harriet is singing out to the slaves in the fields to alert them to her presence.
So Moses went to Egypt and let my people go. After folks heard that, word of where and when I was heading north would spread quickly, and I'd keep to it no matter what. If you ain't there, you was gonna be left behind, and I had my gun with me so that anybody with me ain't turned back.
And to hammer home, we have the final shot of the episode. A slow, creeping zoom in on the actress's face till she speaks directly to the TV audience and hits everyone over the head in case you didn't get the fucking point.
If you don't have it in you to take up arms against the injustice, then you gotta pray another prayer. And you gotta walk in it with conviction. He will provide, but you gotta do your part. You gotta find what it means for you to be a soldier. Beat back those that are trying to kill everything good and right in the world and call it making it great again. We can't afford to be just citizens in a time of war. That'd be surrender. That'd be giving up our future and our souls. Ain't nobody get to sit this one out, you hear me?
And the episode ends in silence. This episode hit me like a ton of bricks when I watched it the first time. I cried after Aisha Hines finished. Really, this is a tour de force for the actress. To be able to hold the whole episode by herself and deliver this monologue is amazing. I read she had 2 weeks and 45 pages of dialogue to memorize, basically learning a whole one-woman show. Now, if every episode of Underground were like this, it would be boring and didactic. But the craft, the writing, and the acting of this particular episode hits hard, because it's a unique episode of television, different from all the episodes before and after it. And I hope that you vote to induct this into the canon.
Thank you, Sean. Malcolm, you chose this. Please start off. What did you think of Sean's argument and of this episode?
I think Sean was 100% dead on. I remember seeing this too when it came out and was completely floored by it. It's stunning. I watched it again last night. It's a stunning piece of television. Absolutely incredible. I think he said everything pretty brilliantly. The fact that she remembered all this dialogue and delivered it so eloquently is just astonishing. The only other thing I would add, he alluded to this too, the more potent irony for me too is, like he said, the station closed or shut down, the network shut down after it was sold to a quite conservative leaning company. And mm-hmm. I think the sort of bitter pill to swallow, the irony of it is that they wanted to focus on something. Like the phrase might have been something like family entertainment or something like that. And I think that the glorious, painful irony of that entire situation is that, to Sean's point, everybody should see this. Everybody should know what happened. Every American should hear what she had to say and how it was delivered, because what she says about freedom and what it means to be free, we all take for granted. I would say even Black Americans, I don't want to speak for all Black people, but I mean, I've never had to live through anything like that. You know what I mean? So I think it's just something we all need to see as Americans and understand what people really, really went through, and Black people really went through to be a part of this country. It was a it's an exceptional, astonishing piece of television. Canon, yes. Boom, stamp it, yes.
And we should say both of the two seasons are on Hulu. But yes, WGN is now News Nation, home of Chris Cuomo's new talk show. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I'll go next. This was, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. This was not a show that I watched at the time, and I'm definitely going to catch up on it now. But Sean, you know, alluded to how it is like watching a one woman show. It's like a play, and that could, on paper, you might think that would be static, but the way they shoot it and the way Aisha Hines like occupies the space makes it so dynamic. Every choice she makes, you're so focused on her because there's really nothing else to look at. And so the stage is part of the story. Every time she chooses to step off, it is part of the story. Her face does so much. I mean, the moments where she like throws in a little joke to lighten the mood, it's like there's a showmanship to what she's doing. And what the episode is trying to do, what all of Underground as a series is trying to do is tell the story of slavery. And what this episode is saying is like, you can't portray it. Like, it's not possible to, you know, she says it's like next to hell, and like something this splits the difference between actually portraying what she's talking about and letting the viewer know we can't know what it was like. You can't know what it was like. This is as close as we can get, this firsthand telling, to get this across. And my one knock on it is, like, you know, we heard it in the clip. I wish they had not actually put "Making It Great Again" in that final monologue. It's just like, I know why. Obviously, I know why, but I wish it hadn't been there. And this was extraordinary. And you know, I said as soon as I saw her face, like, to Dave, oh, it's nice for Aisha Hines to get to do some real acting, because she is a series regular on 9-1-1, and not that she's bad, but that's a very different kind of performance than what she's doing here. And she's, you know, she's incredible. So I'm so glad that Sean brought this to us. It was really an experience. Sarah.
Great art cast a spell, so I don't want to say too much because I don't want to break the spell that this episode continues to cast. I will say Hines is fantastic, perfectly cast, and I've always thought that she has just such stunning charisma that she draws the eye, and what better way to, like, that power is harnessed and perfectly, and she executes on it perfectly. And just everything about it, Tari, you're so right that, like, describing it as like this is a one act, you know, one woman show might not sound appealing to some, but the sort of uniqueness of it works in its favor. And also the performance and the structuring of it and the little breaks that she throws in, like you said, and the fact that you really can't portray that experience. My notes sort of partway through, I was like, oh, they're just going to stay here and let her do this and create this tension with the testimony and not try to, like, do a flashback or a reenactment. Like, do not, because, you know, like I said before, you watch enough true crime and it's like, there's no tasteless lengths. Most creators won't go to make sure you get it. They don't do that here. They understand what the story is and how it needs to be brought forward. I also wanted to keep watching it. One of my key criteria for a canon entry. But again, this was a stunning, almost indescribable hour.
Yeah.
Here in this, you know, audio medium of description podcasts, but excellent presentation, excellent episode. That's it. Dave.
I was so surprised when I find out it was the actress from 9-1-1. As we all know, I'm very, very bad with actors' faces and names. I'm batting about 100, I think, lifetime average of getting it right. I was watching the Andor trailer that just dropped yesterday, and I swear to God, I was like, oh, shit, Truxton Spangler is in Andor. And then I thought for a second, wait, that's not Truxton Spangler. Kind of looks like him. Truxton Spangler from,
I forget his
from
name.
Rubicon. He would be like 85,000 years old now. He would not be in Andor. She is great in this. And I was like, wow, like when you actually give an actor good material, guess what? They can shine. I mean, you know, 9-1-1, not the most challenging of shows. Take your point about the ending, Tara,
yeah.
That it was sort of, for me, it was like why it annoyed me is because it gave ammo to the poignant grunters out there.
Yes.
And they are my least favorite pop culture consumer. Somebody's like, yeah, so anyways, for those who would want to make America great again,
right.
That's them. And I just like, art house movies are filled with them.
Oh, yes.
This is where we coined the term. And when we were just watching it, there literally was a guy four rows back doing that every 30 seconds as if he was the only one who got the fucking move.
And it was Rashomon. Like, we're all smart, okay? This is not a competition.
Yeah. This is why I won't go see movies at BAM anymore. Because it's like, even in the lobby, the grunting is happening. Like, at the popcorn toppings, stop.
So, yeah. So maybe they didn't nail, you know, the dismount on this, but everything else about this was really powerful and really great. And I usually don't enjoy stagey stuff, but I felt like they really nailed the presentation and made it compelling in all the ways that Tara and Sarah were talking about with the camera work, with the stage direction, where she was going and where she wasn't going at certain points.
And the costume too, that you know, when she starts talking about war, it's like, oh, this is why she's wearing this sort of Marshall style jacket. All I wanted to add, because Adam Grossworth is screaming, is that Truxton Spangler was played by Michael Christopher, and the reason Adam's screaming is because he was also in Smash. He is still alive. He is quite old. He's in his late 70s, but he's, you know, the last credit on his IMDb is Mr. Robot in 2019. So he could be in Andor.
Oh, yeah.
God, if Mr. you Robot. Can find me a better character name than Truxton Spangler, I encourage you to send it my way, because I don't think it can be done.
No.
This is a very powerful episode of television, and I felt like they took a format that I just don't usually care to consume and don't usually enjoy it, and they made it happen, and it was very powerful, and I think it's kind of required viewing. So let's put this to the official vote. Malcolm, canon worthy?
Yay.
Sarah D. Bundy?
Absolute yay.
Tara?
Yep, yay.
Yep, me too. So. All right, that means Underground Season 2, Episode 6, Minty, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It is Breaking Bad. The city of Albuquerque has unveiled statues of Walter White and Jesse Pinkman, which, you know, just in time for that entire universe to be wrapping up. Wonderful timing.
And loserly?
Well, poor old Peacock. First of all, it lost a million subscribers in Q2 of 2022, but surely it adds some paid ones, right? Nope, it added zero paid subscribers in the second quarter of 2022. Yikes!
Oops.
Yeah.
Speaking of zeros.
Let's look for another platform that you can merge with, because that is some roof stoof and bad news for a lot of shows that we really like, such as Girls 5 Eva and Rutherford Falls, which are on Peacock and might be on nothing, because both of those premiered their second seasons in Q2 and it apparently did not help.
Well, speaking of putting zeros up on the board, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
First of all, I'd just like to apologize for last week's tech issues with game time. We are, in fact, counting it. Sarah mopped the floor with the competition in that one.
It was not close.
For once.
But we will actually play that game in the next listener game time tournament. So we will still get to use it live to tape. This right here is the fifth game time of the season. Our scores now, with last week included, Sarah with two, Tara with two, value guests with zero. Today, we are playing Breaking In from Tomka, who earns herself an extra credit topic. Here's how it works. Contestants get a short-ish, sometimes they're actually kind of chunky, description of a storyline in which characters try to break in or break out of some place. A prison, a log cabin, a car, you get the idea.
Yep.
Name the show for 2 points or ask for a hint and I'll give you the name of an actor involved, after which the answer is worth 1 point. You only get one guess, so make it count.
Okay.
Got it.
Steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah DeMunting has 12 steel meals. I have 7 steel meals. Valued guest has 6 steel meals plus Eric's meal, so that means 7. And Malcolm, that means if you know the answer when someone else gets it wrong before Dave gives the right answer, you can leap in and say steel meal and you can steal those points.
All right. Let's throw it to Picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. We've got Sarah, then Tara, then Malcolm. Are we ready to play Breaking In?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
All right. Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting. Here is your description of something in a TV show where people are breaking in or out of somewhere. The protagonist plans the theft of a high-priced necklace from the Louvre. Under an alias, he attends an auction for the necklace and wins. Afterward, he goes to inspect his purchase and is physically attacked by an accomplice. During the kerfuffle, he swaps the necklace for a fake and hides the original in a trash can, which he comes to collect later as a janitor. What is that show? If you don't know the show, I can give you an actor involved in that scene.
This could be several, and I don't want to immediately burn a guess, so could I have a hint, please?
Wait, you think this as explained, happened in a few different shows?
Yeah, I mean, this could have happened on a bunch of different USA shows, but I'm not sure, so that's why I need a hint.
I thought you had a few scenes in mind where somebody buys a necklace at the Louvre, and you were like, well, it could be one of those. All right, we're talking about Omar Sy.
That didn't help. So yeah, Malcolm, enjoy this point. Alias.
Okay, I'm gonna steal mail because I'm probably gonna screw up the rest of this. So Lupin.
Yes,
that's right.
Lupin, 1 point.
Lupin.
Never
seen that.
I'm gonna lose the rest of this game, but at least I got one point.
Stupid. You don't know.
He hasn't even had his first question, and he's winning. Tara.
Yes.
A police detective makes a bet with his boss to prove that he would be a great criminal. He needs to steal a prized possession from the boss's office by midnight. After several botched attempts, he manages to do it with the help of several colleagues.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yes, that is the first Halloween heist episode. All right, Malcolm, here is your first true question. A crazy professor has taken over a community college and taken a hostage as well. A group of students try to sneak on campus to rescue him. To succeed, one of them has to sacrifice himself and enlist in the air conditioning school. Any idea what that show is? If you don't know the show, you can ask for a hint.
All right, hint.
All right. One of the actors involved in that caper is Donald Glover.
Oh, so this is Community?
Community, yes. Good for 1 point.
Well done.
Back to Sarah. Three kids try to sneak out of a kid's compartment on a train to steal chocolate from a chocolate fountain. One of them hides in the drinks trolley and is wheeled right into the kitchen by the conductor.
Hint.
One of the actors involved is the voice of Christian Schaal.
Oh, extra hint. This
does not necessarily help me, but maybe it's The Simpsons.
Incorrect. That is Bob's Burgers. In your defense, she is a voice in 5,000 cartoons.
She is.
Tara.
Yes.
A doctor tries to endear himself to his nemesis from work. He decides to help him move house and notices too late that the move is actually a robbery.
I'm just going to go for it and say Scrubs.
Scrubs is correct.
What?
The janitor in JD. Correct. All right. Back to Malcolm. Two dead people and a not robot try to escape their woes by train. They escape to a neutral zone of sorts, only to return because they don't want to leave their friends behind.
Oh, is this Snowpiercer?
Snowpiercer is your answer? Incorrect.
Steel meal.
Steel meal from Sarah, returning the favor.
Good Place.
Good Place. Yes, that is the medium play storyline from The Good Place.
When you said not robot, I still was like Westworld because I know they have trains.
All right, back to Sarah.
It was the train that got me.
The gang believes their old rival Gary has stolen something from them. In retaliation, they break into his business. They lock the place with padlocks and make it look like it is out of business. When they find out Gary was not behind the initial theft after all, they become increasingly paranoid for his retaliation and end up punishing themselves.
Then can I have a hint, please?
One of the people involved in that breaking in out scenario is Mr. Ted Danson.
Oh, cheers.
Gary's Old
Gary.
Town Tavern.
Right.
Tara.
Yeah.
A high school girl gets reprimanded by a counselor for being too much of a loner. She makes contact with a group of girls at lunch, only to find out they are a secret high school sorority. For her initiation, they break into the headmaster's office at night and get caught.
Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls is correct for two. I was
thinking Veronica Mars until you said headmaster.
This is for Malcolm. We'll take us into our halfway point of the game. Prison guards go on strike the same day that the prison dorms are being renovated. The inmates have to stay in the yard where the contractors just happen to be scheduled to replace a portion of the fence. The prisoners break out and have a nice day of short-lived freedom.
Here's an additional hint. I cried.
If this is Orange is the New Black.
Yes, Orange is the New Black. Good for two. All right, that is our halfway point.
It's not much of a hint. I'm a crier.
Score.
Very, very tight game. Sarah DeMunting has 3. Malcolm has 4. I have 6.
All right, let's get right back to it with the next question for Sarah. A commoner breaks into the palace and enters the queen's bedroom at night. But not to worry, he's just chatting with her about the abysmal state of the country.
Oh, sure is.
He's just chatting with her. Hint.
Olivia Colman. Here.
Oh God, why can't I remember the name of that show, which is not Broadchurch?
Sanford and Son.
Broad Palace. I don't know. Someone steal it.
Broad Palace is incorrect. No stealings? No. All right, that is The Crown. The Crown.
Oh.
Tara.
Yes.
All right, buckle in. This is a long one.
All right.
In a scheme to make a quick buck, the gang sets up an escape room in the basement to lure customers in with $10,000 in prize money. Of course, the first group of customers to find this key. Of course, the first group of customers find the key to escape almost instantly, and our main guy panics and swallows the key to keep them locked in.
This is a distant memory now, but I'm going to guess it anyway. Is this Kevin Can Fuck Himself?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Wow.
Nicely done. Back to Malcolm. A lonely man makes his new home in a pompous villa whose owners are no longer alive. He completely trashes the place and uses the pool for a toilet. He also gathers valuable objects from other deserted homes and hoards them in his luxury pigsty.
Oh my God, I know this one. I know it. The Last Man on Earth?
Last Man on Earth is correct.
Yes. Yes.
Will Forte. Wow,
nice.
Last
Nicely
Man
done.
On Earth. All right, Sarah. The background singer on a cruise ship gets to understudy when the star of the show, Dionne Warwick, gets sick from filthy pool water. To keep his spot in the limelight, he contaminates her food with the pool water to keep her sick, eventually poisoning the whole ship. He has no choice but to flee on a lifeboat. Hungry and lost at sea, he is finally forced to eat Dionne Warwick.
Oh my God.
This is a canon.
Sounds amazing, but I still need a hint.
Oh boy.
Titus Burgess.
Oh, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Yes.
This was a canon submission by Joe, I believe.
It was, yes.
Oh my God. How do I not remember that?
Tara.
Yeah.
At the peak of a will they, won't they plot line, a guy climbs out of an apartment window when he is supposed to kiss his longtime crush because he does not want their first to happen as part of a silly game.
How I Met Your Mother?
Incorrect. She took a stab at it, did not get it correct. What if I said Mr. Jake Johnson?
Oh, that's New Girl. It was also a canon episode.
All right, back to Malcolm. A married couple needs a little getaway and gets permission from a neighbor to stay in his cabin for a sexy weekend. When they arrive, they cannot find the key under the doormat and break in. When they emerge from the bedroom a while later, they find two complete strangers in the living room listening in on them. Of course, they are in the wrong cabin. Now, I'll let you know, you get two actors for this hint if you need it.
Okay, hey.
You want that hint? Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, this is just great.
Just great. Yes, good for one. All right, everybody's last question coming at you, so let's get the scores quickly.
It's still real close. Sarah with 4, Malcolm with 7. I have
8. All right. All right, here we go. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
The protagonist accidentally texts something to her crush that was meant for her best friend. The only solution is, of course, to break into his apartment and delete the text before he can read it. She does manage to do so, but gets caught and makes up a crazy story about a break-in at her own apartment and forces her best friend to stage a broken window. A classic test emergency, right? Or is it a test-tastrophe?
Happy endings?
Happy endings is, in fact,
incorrect. Oh, that's a good guess, though. That sounds happy endings-y.
Yeah.
That is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, first season.
Oh.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. All right, Tara.
Yep.
When two colleagues with a will-they-or-won't-they thing get stuck in an elevator, they keep trying to solve a case over the phone. They could escape through a hatch on the roof of the elevator were it not blocked by the giant stadium seats they were transporting. At the end of the episode, they need to smash the seats to clear the hatch. Could have done that hours earlier when the whole situation would have escalated. Sure, but that's not the way TV works.
Well, I just have to guess, so I'm going to guess Castle.
Castle, you're so close. Oh. To me, this feels like Castle and Bones are could have been the same series.
Yes, yeah. But it's the other one.
It's Bones.
Okay. Oh, Bones.
All right, just how many points does Malcolm need to tie or win?
He needs 1 point to tie, 2 points to win.
All right, if you can get Malcolm. If you can get this, 2 points, you take it right now, Malcolm. Here we go. A group of children pretend to be detectives and sneak into apartments in their building to solve pretend mysteries. They keep breaking into apartments as teenagers until one of them ends up dead on the pavement after a New Year's Eve party. Do you know that show?
Jesus.
You can also get the hint, which will give you 1 point and a tie.
Fuck. I'm going to go for broke and guess. Is it Gossip Girl? Is it Gossip Girl?
No, it's not Gossip Girl. All right, let's just see if you would have got the 1 point.
Yeah, what the hell?
And what if I told you it was Selena Gomez? Was your hint?
It's not Only Murders in the Building.
It's Only Murders.
Sure,
what
oh,
it is.
Oh, that's right. Because I was thinking you said teenagers and Steve Martin and what's his name? We're not teenagers.
No, they're not.
Oh, all right, boy. Tara, let's get the end of regulation scores, please.
Beautifully close game. Sarah finished with 4. Malcolm with 7. I had 8.
All right, Tara takes it.
Nicely done.
Tara.
Well done. Well fought. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We joined together for Uncoupled before going around the dial with stops at Surface, This Fool, Young and Pregnant, and The Ipcrest File. Sean set the stage for Underground's Minty's induction into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Tomka. Next up, Eyebrows. On Extra Extra Hot Great, and on the next EHG Prime, it's Sandman. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
every British person is a spy.
Sarah D. Bunting,
who do I have to blow to get me one of those?
And Malcolm Venable,
is it Gossip Girl?
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
There's no story here, boys. We're just taking some time off to figure things out.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.